You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle.
There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. 'Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
This is the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris. And by conniving and plotting, I have managed to corner two other people and get them to also talk by and be recorded for half an hour. And those people are...
Oren, and I feel very manipulated right now, Chris. I don't know if you're a very sympathetic character.
And then our special, special person who has been manipulated into being on this podcast is our special guest, Kristen.
Hey, I don't know. I'm second guessing this now.
So yes, we are here to talk about depicting manipulative characters, and I just thought I'd give you guys some firsthand experience. I thought that would be helpful, like inspiration.
It's definitely very valuable, I think. It was for our own good, I think, is why you manipulated us.
No.
Okay, yeah, so this was actually a question that a listener had asked a while back, and I sent them like a text response because I didn't know how long we would take to get here, but they had specifically been asking about how to make some of their characters like seem more manipulative and how to like portray that. But I think we can expand this topic a little bit and how to talk about manipulative characters in general. And the first thing, just want to put this right at the top, is that for women characters, being manipulative is a stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the standard for when you don't want to, when you have a woman character who isn't likable, it's because you make them manipulative, and that plays into all kinds of ideas that people have about women. So you need to be like really careful with that.
When I was thinking up examples of well done manipulative characters, I specifically stayed away from women characters.
Yeah,
that's hard. I think I don't know if I would be willing to say never do a female character that's manipulative, but I feel like you need to kind of step back and be like, okay, if I was writing a male character as manipulative, how would I do it? And then avoid certain stereotypes, like for instance, any kind of like something that would be associated with hysteria. I've just been listening to the first book on the Laundry Files, and this, you know, the main character has this sort of on again off again relationship with this woman who is apparently threatens to commit suicide sometimes and yells at him and things, and it's a very like woman being hysterical type of stereotype, and threatening self-harm if somebody does something is real. Mm-hmm. It's not cool, and yeah, people do it. But in this particular context, you know, when I've known it to happen in real life, it's been men who threaten suicide if their wives leave them. It's often used to control women, and this, but packaging it as part of this hysteria, crazy ex-girlfriend, stereotype really plays off of, very damaging stereotypes about women.
Right. And like, on the one hand, I don't want to, like, put a ban on any women characters ever being manipulative because, like, I think that's very limiting. But on the other hand, it is something that, regardless of what we do, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that your audience will dislike a woman character more for any manipulation that she does as opposed to a male character. I could be wrong about that, but that's my gut feeling.
And, of course, another thing that is just done a lot that should not be done is, please, no seduction. Having women like seduce people or use sex to get what they want as a sort of a manipulation tactic is just don't do it. Just stay away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just even if it wasn't inherently sexist, it's super overdone.
It really is.
And they call it a cliche for a reason. So yeah, I would just say stay away from
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But I think if you had a female character who was like a business person and was using ruthless business tactics, I feel like that's a much better place for because it comes with things that are generally associated with men, and so I feel like it's a better way to sort of avoid the stereotypes about women while still having a manipulative female character. For instance, in Jessica Jones, I don't remember her name. There's a lawyer who's a woman who definitely comes off as kind of like ruthless.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that character is male in the comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
So that might explain why she doesn't feel like she's falling into stereotypes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, this is where gender flipping is really useful. If you want a manipulative character, writing it as a man and then gender flipping it is a good way to go if you want the character to be a woman. But otherwise it can be really hard to avoid those stereotypes about women when it comes to manipulation.
Yeah, and so if you're looking at trying to make a manipulative character sympathetic, for one thing, you could have them manipulate bad people, right? Like, you know, if your character is the good guy and they're using like politics and smarts to like outmaneuver the bad guy, like that will just make them seem cool, right? Like, it's not going to make them seem like unlikable. But if you want them to be manipulating characters who are not necessarily evil, a way to still keep them sympathetic could be to show that they're doing this for like a greater cause. Like the character of Lord Vetinari from Discworld, he's very manipulative, and like he loves to manipulate the protagonist, Commander Vimes, like all the time, and like get him to do stuff, and like he's doing it because it's like for the good of Ankh Morpork, but at the same time, like it makes him kind of a darker character. And one of the things that's key about Vetinari is that sometimes he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes he overplays his hand and is like, you know, tries to manipulate characters into doing something and it doesn't work out for him, and like he would have been better served in those contexts just by playing straight. And I think that's important too, because you don't want to end up like feeling like you're endorsing manipulative behavior and saying that it's like a good thing.
So one really big one that stands out to me, that as soon as I saw the topic for this one, I was like, Dumbledore.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love Harry Potter. I really do. But Dumbledore to me is a very manipulative character, and it's done in a very subtle way where you don't, like, the first time I read through the books, I didn't realize how manipulative he was. And then on rereadings, it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, why did he put Harry with the Dursleys? He states right out that he knew that he wasn't going to have a good childhood by putting him there. You know, why does he keep Severus Snape on as a teacher when he is a horrible teacher? He is detrimentally impacting the lives of all these children that are going through his classes. You know, and then there's the information giving, the dropping little hints and leaving little clues and things like that for how Harry finds out all this information and eventually ends up at the conflict at the end of every book. And stuff. And so it's all these little things that he really is like the little puppet mastermind just up there going, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to put this here and, you know, and things like that. And, oh, I'm going to say this and, you know, so that, you know, Harry will think about this and things like that. So to me, he's an extremely manipulative character, but he's also doing it all for the good.
Well, if I may, this is perhaps is rude for a guest, but I'm going to have to enter disagreement mode. Okay, so like nothing you said is wrong, but with Dumbledore, I really feel like Dumbledore being manipulative is like backfilling to try to explain things that make no sense. It's like because you're right. Like I recently read Book 7. And I was like, wow, Dumbledore is just really conniving. And I was like, but like, why did he do any of this? Like, you know, like the whole like placing Harry with the Dursleys. Like, I think at some point Rowling realized that didn't make any sense. And so she was like, oh, well, that's because Dumbledore had this like deep plan. And it's the same thing with him keeping Snape on and like not telling Harry information that Harry couldn't know because the audience couldn't know it yet. And like, yes, that does make Dumbledore a manipulative person, but, like, he doesn't have any reason to do that. Like, he could have, his goals could all have been served by being straighter with people, and he, like, unless the idea is that he's, you know, he's just not very smart, then, like, and he's manipulating people just for no reason, which I don't think is the implication. I think he's supposed to be, like, a ruthless mastermind. Like, I would argue that doesn't work very well, which is, like, one of the reasons why there is, like, a whole school of, like, Harry Potter fanfic writers that think Dumbledore is, like, the devil. and think he's, like, I think he's super evil and that he's, like, worse than Voldemort.
Okay.
So if I may interject. So I think this is the reason why it's, for any storyteller, it is problematic to have any character that is very powerful and benevolent. It causes problems with the story because if they're actually powerful and they're actually benevolent, and this could be like a Dumbledore or Gandalf, or this could be like an actual god that's supposed to be a good god that your characters, you know, are like clerics of or whatever, like, you have to explain why this person doesn't solve all of the problems. Like, how do you get conflict? And if this person really, like, is benevolent and did good things, then you wouldn't have any conflict left in your story. And so then what ends up happening is this character ends up being some sort of, like, weird puppet master, where they only give information out at the right times and make it really confusing for the protagonist and leave them on a goose chase and, like, and then, like, fix characters because they know what's best for them and just behave in a really, like, manipulative, not very nice manner that can, and sometimes it just, like, Dumbledore just comes off of, like, okay, this character is not actually supposed to be a good person. This character is kind of manipulative. It can also just look really bad, though, for the writer. Sometimes it just comes up off as the writer not looking good. Like the maybe this character that was supposedly benevolent completely ignored something that was wrong and just let people suffer when they didn't have to. And Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, Gandalf just disappears. Like, in order to take care of this problem, there's something he needs elsewhere. He just goes. He just disappears. But Rowling does do that with Dumbledore sometimes too. Like, you know, suddenly the council, the Hogwarts, I don't know what they're called, board of directors.
Yeah.
Suddenly turns against him, right? Or he was lured away on a business trip to another country and then, you know, by the bad guy before something goes down. But to explain how somebody as powerful as Dumbledore lets somebody like Harry stay with the Dursleys, you end up with all of these contortions. And, you know, and if you do that kind of thing on purpose, if you want a character that could be, like, Dumbledore, that could be seen as evil or seen as a really great person, that might be interesting for a story, but it's certainly not something that somebody should walk into without looking first, right? But anyway, so that's, but yeah, that is definitely an interesting lens, and I feel like there is something kind of problematic about taking a character like Dumbledore, who is doing potentially very manipulative, not good things, and then packaging it as a good guy, as an altruistic behavior, right?
Yeah.
And part of the problem is that it all gets kind of revealed in a big rush at the end in book 7. And, like, it's like, part of the problem is that it was just super annoying at that point because it was, like, Harry is, like, really angsty over Dumbledore being a good person or not. And I'm like, Dumbledore is dead, okay?
Yep.
Like, go fight Voldemort already. I'm not...
So,
you can figure...
Yeah. As someone who does love Harry Potter, I agree with you on that. That I felt that the whole Dumbledore storyline at the end was a little bit too angsty, and why is he so worried about this? Go finish Voldemort and then worry about Dumbledore.
Now, if we can get back on the train of how to depict these characters for a moment. it's fine. I took us on that sidetrack. I knew where I was going.
You knew where you were manipulating that train.
Yeah. So, but I think there are kind of two basic ways of portraying a manipulative character. One way is a character who doesn't seem manipulative, and you only realize they're manipulative after, like, looking at their actions in context, right? And this is, like, someone who actually tricks the protagonist, or if they are the protagonist, actually tricks other people, and is, you know, and, like, looks friendly and seems to have everyone's best interests at heart. And then you can have the person who, to anyone but the target of their manipulation, is obvious what they're doing. And this is someone who, like, you know, really heavily leans on a past favor they might have done. It's like, hey, man, like, I helped you move that bed when you really needed someone to help you move that bed. Aren't you going to help me break in and steal this code that I need? I mean, what are friends for? Are you not a good friend?
Oren, are you saying that I was being manipulative by making you break into some place and like? I thought helping you move your bed was like enough payment for that.
And like in that situation, if you heard it from the outside, it would be really obvious that manipulation was going on. But if you're the target, like, you know, and you feel indebted to this person, like, it might not be obvious to you, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that is the biggest dilemma in depicting manipulative characters. I feel like somebody who is truly manipulative basically doesn't look that way, because they lose power. Like, they've already somewhat failed at manipulating if people look at them and realize that they are being manipulative.
Yes.
Instead, what they do is... They work to build a narrative where they are the good guy and their target is the bad guy. You know, mm-hmm. either other people think their target is the bad guy, depending on who this is for and who they are manipulating, or, you know, the target feels like they are the bad person. And the problem with this is that audiences don't understand emotional abuse.
Yeah,
and
this is true.
And even though this is what often looks like in real life, they are not good at catching on to this kind of subtlety. And you've got, if you do stuff like that, you have too many people who genuinely believe the abusive narrative that you're depicting and think your manipulative person is the good guy. And so that, and I feel like that might be worth doing if you had a full novel where you have the ability to have thoughts, you have the ability for exposition, you have a lot of time, and so you can really explain the pattern and show how this person is being abusive. But like, if you're in a visual medium or your work is short, it's like, it's just better to make that manipulation more overt, because otherwise there's just, you know, too much chance, I think, that your audience will take it the wrong way.
Yeah. So going off of your explanation, that made me think of Light Yagami in Death Note, where the entirety of, and I don't know if you guys have seen this or read the manga, but it's an anime manga. But the entirety of it is that the protagonist is manipulating all the people around him in order to make them think that the killer is actually the guy who's chasing him and trying to catch him and stuff. And so it's very well done, I feel, in the beginning, once sort of that Light has sort of overcome the initial obstacles, I feel that it kind of falls down a little bit. But no, I definitely feel that is definitely one where you've got the main character who is manipulating all the people around him, and while the person that he is manipulating does not realize it for a very long time.
Yeah, and I have to say, I have not read the manga, but I have seen a large portion of the anime,
mm-hmm.
that you see Light's perspective.
Yes.
Right? So you get to see him, like, cackle and then make his plans, you know?
Yes.
Because you have, and he's, you know, you have a, he's a villain protagonist, basically.
He is, yeah.
And so you get to, it's kind of like in House of Cards. You know, you have a villain protagonist. In that case, like, to other people, he might appear benevolent, but you get to see him, his sort of plotting, and I think that's a great point, that really kind of reveals the depth of the manipulation that wouldn't be apparent if you weren't seeing from their perspective.
And sometimes, another reason why I think it is better to err on the side of being clear is that, in addition to audiences not understanding emotional abuse... a lot of writers don't understand it, and if I'm an audience guy, if I'm reading a book, and, like, it's very easy for me to get fed up with a story about a character who's being clearly manipulative and emotionally abusive, because I don't know if this author actually knows what they're doing or not, and very often it's so irritating to read with the idea that they might not know what they're doing and be just portraying this manipulation as being positive, that I might not finish the book,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, because I've seen that too many times. So, like, if you're an author and you want me to finish your book, like, I would err on the side of making that, you know, like, obvious at the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just so that I know that you're not, you know, pulling a thing where it's, like, gonna be, like, revealed, like, where it's gonna be, we're talking about the abusive brother, and then and then near the end it's, like, revealed, no, your brother actually loved you, everything he did was because he loved you, because if that happens, I'm a rage quit.
You're talking about Mistborn?
Yeah, I'm definitely talking about Ms. Clark. and that reveal is one of the reasons why I have not read the next two books. I just refuse. I'm like, no, that was bad, and you shouldn't have done that. And, like, I'm not going to pick up another one of your books because I no longer trust you.
Yeah. Voyager also is kind of the case in point about this. Voyager has all sorts of, like, really kind of bullying relationships that are packaged as good. The Paris and Taurus romance is just full of Paris badgering Taurus about her own behavior that is not justified. And the Janeway 7 of 9 relationship has lots of Janeway being controlling about how 7 of 9 should be and just ignoring her own preferences for herself. So,
and although it should be noted that I have, even though there are of course lots of people who like the Janeway 7 relationship, I also, you know, I know a fair amount of people who would describe it as manipulative, whereas I don't know if I've ever met anybody except for me and Chris who would describe the Paris-Torres relationship as manipulative, even though it is. But, you know, it's a guy doing it, so it's like, we don't go there as easily, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I definitely would agree with you both, though, that the relationship between Paris and Torres is definitely a level of manipulation, and to some extent, I would even say that it's society's expectations of how women, or in this instance, a Klingon, is supposed to act that is driving that manipulation.
I also find that in both Voyager and Enterprise, there's this idea that this generic white male character will help other people by being harsh with them. That it is his responsibility to fix other people by telling them harsh truths or something. But a lot of times these aren't, like, it's not actually any truth. It's just that person's opinion about what other personal choices that somebody else should make, that they would have no way of knowing whether it's the right one, and it really is just bullying. But it's weird because it is almost always in a lot of those cases, it's, you know, always a white character, usually a male character. And that's why, like, definitely wary about sort of the depiction, like the more realistic depictions of manipulation getting to the point where somebody else would think, no, sometimes you need to give somebody harsh truth, you know, that sometimes you got to bully somebody into doing what's best for them. It's like, no, that is not something that you should do, but many people think it is.
And it usually falls under the title of tough love.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is especially a toxic stereotype for men.
Yeah.
Yep.
But maybe we should talk about, like, okay, so assuming that we want to have a manipulative character and we want that manipulation to be overt, so we avoid all these, like, what are things that manipulative characters do, right?
Well, one thing that I found that I think most people will realize is manipulation, that, but at the same time is subtle enough to the person being targeted that it would make sense that they wouldn't immediately realize it, is when a character leans on whatever their relationship is, like, you know, hey, we're good friends, we've known each other for a long time, you'd do this for me, wouldn't you? I think most people seeing that in a vacuum, like from the outside, will realize that is clearly manipulative behavior. But, you know, we also could understand why the person being targeted doesn't immediately recognize it as such, because to them they might be thinking, yeah, well, I guess we have been friends, I don't want to be a bad friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right, that sort of thing.
They're in the middle of it. And so it's harder to see. Right.
Yeah. It's kind of like, if you don't do this for me, you don't love me.
Another thing to keep in mind that sometimes people kind of forget is that even manipulative characters have goals, right? Like, they're usually doing this for a reason. They're not just for the sake of manipulating. And that can be sometimes hard to tell because sometimes their goal is increased social authority, right? But that's still a goal. That's still something that they want. So outside of a comedy, you generally, like, a character who just manipulates for the sake of doing it is going to come off as flat. And that actually, I would argue that becomes a problem even with Frank Underwood, because we talked about him briefly from House of Cards, and he is a villain protagonist. But he does, at least for me, hit a point where you eventually feel like, why is he doing this? Like, what would he actually do if he became president? Which is kind of his eventual goal, right? He doesn't seem to have any reason to want it. So after that, he kind of started
power, but you don't have any idea what he's going to do with the power once he has it.
And so that, like, you know, that is technically a goal, but it was one that wasn't, like, super compelling to me.
Yeah, to make any motivation compelling, you have to add sort of concrete details about the results. Like, for instance, if your character wants this new job, knowing that that job will give them an increased paycheck that will allow them to move out of their, like, really crappy living situation where people next door are arguing all night and they can never sleep. Like, those kinds of concrete details are what makes anything compelling. And power is a very abstract concept. And so without knowing, like, you know, Frank Underwood wants the power so that he can pardon his friend who has been in jail for his whole life for something that Frank Underwood did, for instance, and then his friend was blamed for. Like, that. Now there's something very specific and concrete, right?
So you don't see... So what you're saying is that you don't see power for power's sake a good motivation. Because that's the way that I've seen Frank Underwood's character to some extent, is that he wants the power because it's power.
I mean, yeah, and there's like a... There's definitely a preference there, right? But, like, clearly a lot of people like Frank, think he's fine. But, like, that just wasn't enough to keep me interested in the show, right? Like, I needed...
Well, no.
Like, I
definitely would say I don't watch the show anymore either. But that's the way I saw his character while I was watching it, was that he wanted power for power's sake.
Yeah. I feel like with that kind of thing, it's realistic enough that it gets kind of a pass because people can kind of understand it. I feel like you can always make it stronger if you add something concrete, or also establishing the motivations behind it clearer, like him imagining his own face on, you know, Mount Rushmore or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we can understand the pride part of that. Like, there's more feeling to it. It's not the worst thing ever, because it's people, we have lots of villains like that. It's somewhat realistic, but I do think it could be stronger in that if you stick to any abstract concept, even one that feels realistic, there's room for improvement.
Yeah.
Not that it's terrible, but yeah. And again, we can keep the power, but like having seeing various things that he wants to do with that power is just going to make it stronger.
All right. Well, we are about out of time. Oh, but Chris, do you have a final thing you want to leave the audience with?
Not in particular. I wouldn't mind going over some more ways that characters can be to address our original question.
Yeah.
You have characters that you want to be manipulative. What do you do with them? I feel like the playing on a friendship, because it circumvents whether what that person wants is reasonable. I would say also, like, whenever a character is clearly playing on another person's emotion, you know, such as their pride, that is an obvious sign of manipulative behavior, being like, oh, your boss doesn't value you, don't you want to just do something to get back at them? Or, you know, like those obvious plays on people's emotions, in order to get somebody to do a specific result. And like Oren said, if we know their motivation, and we know that their motivation is selfish, and they're manipulating another person's emotions to do something that's clearly for their own ends, that is an obvious sign of a manipulative character.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Kristen, for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah, it has been. And so for those of you listening at home, if anything that we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. And maybe after, like, I don't know, 3 months, we'll actually answer it. All right. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreent Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.